This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Brock Rahm.
It's all the things when I was starting out that nobody told me or talked about, right?
And Darius Thomas.
Sorry, I was trying to see what this noise was in my apartment.
Jason Levine is the VP of Content and Production for the Los Angeles Chargers. From schedule release to draft hype and selling content, we dive deep into understanding how they built their voice and how they make decisions when it comes to creating sellable content for their audience. All right, I'm at time. Does if you guys want to get this show
I'm there.
On the road. Brock, you want to give us the call out?
Cool. Let's do at 57.
Ooh. Horrible.
We absolutely don't need it.
Charlotte. Hey, horrible.
I'm not even recording locally anymore, so.
No, oh, no. We definitely don't do that.
If Riverside goes down,
totally.
No, yeah, we're screwed. Podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Excited today to have Jason Levine joining us, Vice President of Content and Production with the Los Angeles Chargers. You've undoubtedly seen some of their fantastic videos that they've produced over the last couple of years, especially with the schedule release videos, the anime style. We'll get into some of that, how that came to be, your draft hype video recently this year as well. And just like to get into how generally you think about content and how you and your team are set up and evolved. So, Jason, thank you so much for joining us and excited to have a conversation with you and hear about your journey and your process.
Happy to be here, fellas. First podcast I've ever done. So happy to help.
Awesome. Can we start by getting a background and hearing how you got into the industry?
For sure. Well, I went to Northeastern University, which is in Boston, Massachusetts, and went to school for sports broadcasting, which this is back in like, I mean, I went to school from 05 to 10. So at that point, you know, social media is not really a thing at all. I think we had Facebook. So my focus was broadcasting, like play by play. So that's what I was doing in college. I was announcing college, our Northeastern men's basketball team. And I thought I had a future in it. Built a reel, everything, was excited to get started, and then realized I left college not really knowing how to use Avid or anything. It was like, what was I doing for 5 years? And left. Well, I guess I could take a step back that in 2009, I was fortunate enough because Northeastern, the shout out Northeastern for a second, they have a co-op program where you're allowed to spend 6 months in school and then 6 months working when you're off just in the workforce. And it prepares you for leaving college. And then at one point over a summer in 2009, I was fortunate enough to work for the Jets, the New York Jets, when they were just building out their media department. And I had a foot in the door and I said, I'd do whatever. And so I logged tapes and helped them build a historical tape library when they were just moving into their new facility. That's all I did for about 5 months, sat in this like basement downstairs and just looked at tapes. Organized and learned it as best I could. You know, this was like the hand logging days, right? So like, it makes me sound so old, but you know what I mean. And so I did that.
Piece of paper, you fold it up, you put it inside the case and time code and yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, just going like moment by moment. So I did that. And by doing that, I guess I kind of like, they liked me over there. And then when I graduated in 2010, I came back as a part-time intern. And I was part-time intern there, and then I was a seasonal intern, and then I was a full-time intern. And then they hired me in maybe like 13. I think I was an intern for like 3 years. And then hired in 13, and I was just like, I was helping with like historical pieces at that point, you know, carrying cameras, shooting, like whatever I could to like just stay in the building, whatever I could do to help. Someone needed a coffee, I got it. Like whatever I could do. And then from there, it was like kind of like doing like digital content, which was like the website at this point. So like very football focused, like X's and O's, working with our senior writer, Eric Allen at the time. He was senior writer. Now he's senior director of content and Just learning from a really great group of people. And then as I was there, some really talented people started to come in. We started to dive into like documentary work, lifestyle stuff. And we were really starting to like kind of get into like the forefront of content. And this was back in like 2015. And then in 2017, I was fortunate enough to be hired by the just named Los Angeles Chargers, moved to San Diego for 5 months to help with the move. The department was me and Jordan Bean, who was leaving but stayed on to help me, and Joel Price, who was the senior director of digital. And that was it at the time. And that's how I ended up here. And I got to be honest, I don't remember the question. So should I keep going on the history?
No, that's great. Just to get a background as a starting point, I think what's interesting to me that I don't hear a lot of people talk about is the number of years that you spent as an intern and why it mattered to you to keep your foot in the door, to keep coming back, even though you didn't have a full-time job with them. I don't think a lot of young people coming out would have the patience for that right now. At least that's my perspective. But that's the sense that I get, is that, well, I don't want to just be an intern. You, within 10 years, after spending 3 years as an intern, you're now a VP. So as somebody who went through that process, I'd just be interested to hear what you learned and how you think it helped prep you for what you do today.
Well, situations dictate patience. Situations dictate your own personal experience and what you can afford to do. I've been fortunate that I have a family that has been successful. And so it afforded me opportunities that probably most other people couldn't be as patient. So that is that's just like the realistic part of it, that made it possible for me to, I think, to be an intern so I could pursue my dreams. And I'm so thankful to my mom and dad for allowing me to live at home for those years that I know was like brutal for them probably. And like helping me get my career started and supporting me a bit when I was getting paid, very little. I think the starting salaries back then were $38,000. It's tough. So, you know, I don't try to project that experience onto other people. And I certainly understand that you can't expect someone from 10 years ago to do the same thing now. It's a different world. But I do think what does translate, Justin, is patience. Patience is very important. And yes, it took 7 years to get here. And that just comes from being supported by a lot of really talented people who believed in me, and then trying to learn as I go as quickly as I could. And that's really it. But patience is like a massive part of it. And being an intern is important. I mean, like, I think sometimes kids leave college and there's some shit, well, intern is like, well, it's an intern. What the hell? I look at it more like it's a trial period. Like, you don't know what you want to do. You're leaving college. You think you know what you want to do, but you haven't done it for a second in a real job, in a real place, and you don't know us from anything. So there's nothing wrong with being a seasonal, learning what you want to do. And then maybe you're like, hey, I want to be here full time. Great. We'll get you hired. But then you might be like, I don't want to do this at all. I want to do something completely different. Well, you're not locked into a job. And so I think there's a little bit of a negative connotation as relates to being a seasonal person, but I think it's a very important step. Seasonals in this building are so important to who we are. We value them so highly. And so, you know, I certainly know that people these days are 100% looking at it differently and expect to leave college with jobs.
What would you say is different now? I mean, you just talked about how you interned for that long. The difference in you starting in the industry and the younger generation, what would you say is different? What is a good advantage and what is a disadvantage in the difference?
Well, I think you could project it out to just life. I mean, I don't have kids, but, you know, I have like, I have been for, you know, I'd say the biggest thing is accessibility to what's happening in the world. So you just have a far greater perspective of what's happening around you in the fortunes or misfortunes of others. And so it helps, I think, young people at a younger age think they have a perspective that they might not actually have from their own experience, but they're able to see it from others. And that shapes an opinion that might be justified or not, right, Darius? So like, I think that's the biggest thing is accessibility to what's happening in the world. It's a very different world now than 10 years ago, politically, socioeconomically, climate, everything. And so those things all are factors, and I think how people certainly see things. And there is 100% a difference in the younger generation in how they view salaries and how they view work. I think one thing I would say is we still are able to identify and find a lot of people who want to work hard, and working hard is extremely important. Work hard, play hard, I guess, is the mantra. But at the same time, like, want to make sure people have time to themselves, of course. But I'd certainly say that the biggest difference is the accessibility to what's happening in this world and how it shapes someone's opinion, not to get all philosophical.
That's a good response. And not to deviate too much from you, but just to kind of wrap this segment on. But you talked about how some kids coming out of, well, some young adults coming out of college now have a higher expectation. They probably live and breathe work-life balance now. What's been your experience when you hire younger professionals? What are some of the conversations that you're having to make sure that their wants and needs match what the Chargers' wants and needs are?
Great question. I don't have a lot of conversations anymore with the younger group. I'd say it's a couple a year. I try to set a tone, and then we're fortunate to have a bunch of great directors and senior directors and leaders in this building who help make sure that that tone is met. The tone is, you're going to work hard. If you want to be here, you're going to work hard. And in return, we're going to give you a master's degree in content. And so you come in here, you do what you're asked to do, you ask questions, you know what's expected of you from day one. You do it, your choice. You don't want to do it, that's also your choice. But you got to deal with the ramifications of that. So we lay that out from the beginning. We're very upfront and transparent with every individual that works here. I totally believe that knowledge is power. You got to give people the information they need in their work to understand why it's important and why what they're doing is important. Like, if you're expecting someone to work a lot of hours, which it's like natural, like football season is a lot. It's a lot, especially when you're like a seasonal. You come in, you're logging at 6 a.m. while I'm sleeping. Like, that's, you know, not easy for people. And it can be really tough for kids leaving college these days, especially with the expectation that they're going to start editing hype videos immediately when it's like, yeah, you got to earn that. You want to work here, you got to earn it. And I think it's really just like, we've really tried to just lay out expectations really early on. Find the people who match that mindset, and then try to teach that mindset along the way.
What goes into setting the vision for the season? I mean, everybody's familiar with the NFL. The NFL, you know, although the season is kind of short, but the season never ends when you're doing community events, yeah. You're doing draft, you're doing OTAs and all this kind. But what goes into setting the vision for the creative plan, not only for the football season, but for the year as well?
I think people assume there's probably like this large meeting where we're sitting in this room and it's like, okay, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. This is exactly how we handle this day. We don't really do that. We set creative frameworks that are put in place by what our sold content is. And from there, we try to find really creative people and then make sure they have the freedom to be creative and understand what performs well and what doesn't. We're a very data-driven group, so we understand walking into a season what in the past has worked and what in the past hasn't. And we're very reactionary too. So as much as we'll come into the plan with a season, we know coming into this year, we have to reevaluate how we celebrate wins. We always do memes, but that's now been popularized by many teams. So the question is, what's the next step in that? What are we doing on TikTok to do it differently? Because TikTok's obviously an avenue where that can happen as well, where that voice kind of plays. And so we know we have to have those conversations and have an idea, but we also know it's going to change 2 weeks in based upon what we're seeing, what the trends are, and what the data is telling us. So mainly what dictates a plan is what's sold. Now, what dictates what's sold is from us, though. And we are a revenue-driven business here. So our success in engagement and content and views on YouTube, everything starts by making sure that we're making money. And we do that by making sure that what is being sold is extremely creative in what we want to do, and at least and always marries up with what the partner wants to do. And then obviously, once you determine that, that's going to base kind of where you are and explore from there where your creative freedoms are to do what you need to do, whether that's on social, graphics, creative, video, whatever it is.
Yeah, that kind of brings up a good avenue I want to talk about a little bit. You touched on it a little bit there, but that's your relationship with your corporate partnership arm. When I was at the Chiefs, you know, you would have a lot of corporate partnerships and corporate partners coming in and saying like, well, we want to do this and this, right? Whereas we would rather say, well, we want you to partner with the content we already have. We're the content experts. You partner with what we have. What's that balance like with your corporate partnership team, and how do you sell your content? Is it a lot of partnered content, or is it a lot of partners coming in and saying, here's what we want from your content?
I'd sell every single thing if I could. I'd sell every single thing that exists. That just makes us money. More money coming in is very advantageous when we get around to salaries and bonuses the next year. This is a business. And what we try to say here is creativity drives our revenue. And I am so thankful to this organization because not a lot of places do it that way. But like, really just break that down, Brock. It's like, if you really think about it, it's simple. So we looked at it and it's like, how are we going to sell our content? Well, we're really good at social. Megan, Julie, and her team are the best in the business. We know what we're doing. We know we have creative people. We know we got good video. So let's make sure that we're incentivizing the client to want to buy it this way based upon, one, what people believe we are based upon our image, and then two, that we're creative enough to figure out a way to make the partner happy, right? If we're as creative as we say we are, I always like to say, Brock, that doing what you want to do is 50% of the job. Doing what you don't want to do and making it what you want to do and making it successful, now you're doing the job. So that's what we figured out how to do. Perfect example is like, we have a series called Camping Out that we do every summer. We build a set, like a full set, camping set. It's during training camp. You're just taking the idea of camping. So we got tents. There's like this big bear in the background. We rent a bunch of plants. We put dirt and sand down. We've got tree stumps. And Sebastian Joseph Day, one of our players, is chatting with another player. Those did about average 50K views per episode on YouTube in full. And then what we do is we sell off impressions. So the client and us are both under the same page. We need to drive impressions, which means it needs to perform well, which means if that's going to happen, the content's got to be something we believe is going to work. And how you set a CPM, variable ranges of that, we've spent 6 years working on that to build a relationship there. I think where we benefit more than maybe some others, Brock, is we've reached a point, and I don't mean this in like a cocky way at all. I think it's just the reality of it. You reach a point where your past work kind of lets you dictate things. And so we've reached a point where people trust us that, oh yeah, this makes sense. The Chargers want to do this. I'm going to trust them to do it. And whether it works or not, they know we're going to try to figure out a way to make it work.
So diving into that a bit about sales and content, because that is an area that a lot of people haven't really figured out. And, you know, it's probably started, we're probably in year 10 of social really taking off for people selling it and all that. How long is that process of figuring out what is sellable? Or do you base new things off of how old things work?
It is 60 to 70% of my job at this point. Most of my time is dedicated towards that. Let me think of the best way to explain it. This has been a really long process, and I've been able to partner with, like, we have like the people I partner with every day, like Casey Knopf, Vice President of Business Solutions, and like her team. And we have an incredible pitch team, incredible activation team. We got a lot of people that believe in what we're doing. So that kind of like really helps a lot. We're a young group, we're a young organization in some respects too, with moving to Los Angeles. And so we've been able to take this different approach. And another part that makes this like, we have to be this way, is we're in Los Angeles. We're with the most sophisticated agencies in the world that are buying our stuff. So we got to be on our P's and Q's, because they're not buying stuff based upon like the quantity that exists. And then it does what? 500,000 impressions, and you're trying to sell it for what, $100,000? That's not happening. It's got to be better than that. So we spent a lot of time evaluating what the client wants, what we want, and trying to pull that together. In terms of like evaluating on our side, what's really cool is like we've built this content performance analytics team within content that Megan Julian, our director of social media, is overseeing. And basically what we've done, this is the first year we finally did it, we have over probably 150 pieces of content that's sellable for this year. We've priced it all out based upon variable CPMs and what we think the performance is going to be, and then past performance. And then we track it as we go and we understand what we're doing. And then as we go, we figure out if it's working and not, and know if we need to adjust it for next year. The only thing we're trying to do is take things that are the most, like the highest performing that we know are going to work, and figure out a way to fit a partner in. But the challenge with that is obviously at some points, the partner is going to dictate what's going to happen. And when that happens, the content performance could suffer. So how do you keep your engagement where you need to keep it? How do you stay number two in views across the entire NFL and YouTube? Well, you make sure you have enough staff and enough wiggle room to create the things that you need to create outside of the structure of sales to do what you need to do to keep yourself where you need to be.
And how do you separate being like a walking billboard on social or YouTube to authentic like content?
I think it's the same thing. I mean, I'll tell anyone, and I wouldn't care. I hope everyone knows we are trying to make as much money as possible. We want to be number one in digital revenue across the NFL, and we're going to do everything we can to catch those teams that would never expect us to be in those conversations. I don't consider it to be a billboard. I look at it that anyone could understand in the sophistication of the audience that exists on social media that any company is trying to sell with their product. That is just, that's just economic 101. So to us, I look at, whenever I get in those conversations, you know what I do? I show young kids Barstool Sports and Bleacher Report and Complex. All of these people are the same thing. They have a business side that's trying to sell their product. That's all we're trying to do too. And we're going to sell it as much as we can. Anybody, the key though is you have to leave enough room for creativity within what that project is. Because you don't want something to be dictated always by the partner. You want to find that middle ground. And mm-hmm. I think we've done a really nice job of doing that. But of course, when something is sold and you sell a lot of it and you start throwing logo bugs on pieces and then you start integrating the product and then you start, it changes it. It does. It changes performance. And so what we try to do is then that's how you get into conversations about we need to acquire Truth or Dab. We need to work with Complex to get something like that done because we know that's going to perform really well, even if we sell it. And you try to have enough stuff where it's like, I don't care if we sell this or not. I know this is going to do big views. I know this is going to be great on social media. And at the end of the day, we always got memes, Darius, and the memes don't sell anywhere. So the more memes we launch and the more creativity we can have in the moment, which we always do, you're going to be okay.
And so you mentioned the sales side and how that benefits the people internally. Externally, how does that affect the fan base and, you know, even the players?
Not at all. Doesn't affect them at all. They consume the content. The numbers show that. If anything, we would like anybody who consumes our content to become a fan. Look, any relationship is transactional. Every single one. If Complex is creating something, it's still transactional. They want you to follow their feeds. And then what do they want you to do? Buy their merch. It's the same thing. We want to create fans through engaging content by understanding who our players are. And then we want you to come to a football game. And then when you come to a football game, we want you to fall in love with this team because of the experience you're having. And then we want you to buy our merch. And we're going to come up with cool ways to do that. And we want you to engage in our content, which is transactional and such. So I don't think it adjusts too much. And of course, for our players, we are going to help you build. Like from the player standpoint, we made it like they see the value in us. That's the best part is when you're able to build a cool product and then they see that, they don't need to go to an agency because their agency is not going to do better than us. And that's it. Like pay talented people to work here, give them the creative bullets to go fire them off, and then let's go do something cool together with our fans, with our players, and our partners.
Can we dive into process a little bit, hearing you talk about how you're set up and trying to make sure that there's creativity for your team and all of that? When you come to either thinking of a new concept that you want to go out with to maybe test when you say you want to have the extra bandwidth in order to be able to still be creative? How does that process get greenlit?
It depends. I mean, schedule release is obviously a little bit different of a process than like a featured series or a social highlight. We don't really have a greenlit process. Everything's greenlit. We're greenlit from the go. The only way you lose the green light is if you're not a good teammate, and then we don't trust you, and then we're not going to trust what you're doing. Like everybody can pitch any idea and do any idea. It's just a matter of time. You know, most of the time, I think the thing here is like, obviously myself or Tyler Pino or Megan Julian, David Bretto, Ali Raymond, a bunch of people on our social the digital side, video side, we're still heavily involved even at what we're doing in our experience. And that might, I don't know if that's different than other teams. I can only speak for us. So obviously we have an idea of where we want to go, and then we expect people to execute. But like we leave an incredible amount of freedom for our TikTok group, our social video team, our YouTube shorts. We have an entire features team that does an incredible job. Like all these people, it's just like you have full carte blanche trust. Do what you got to do. And then when we get to the bigger things like schedule release, and you want to do what that is, yeah, we got to talk about that. Or, you know, the video we did for the hype video going to the Jaguars game, that receipts video we did that got a bit of attention. Yeah, we got to talk about that. But this group has earned my trust. Like, who am I to tell them not to do something and take a chance? Like, they've earned that. They care so much. And when you're passionate about what you do, I don't want to get in the way of that as best I can.
So when you were talking earlier about setting expectations, it seems like the goal is, hey, these are the things we have to get done. And then outside of that, if you have an idea, take it, run with it, show us, and take it from there. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I'd say the best way to do it. Now, obviously, if you sell everything, if that actually ever happened, you'd have to hire more staff because you wouldn't have enough staff to probably do everything you sold. And then you would need to add more content probably just to make sure you were still doing the engagement you want to do, right? So I think it's like a little bit of it goes both ways. But that's the best way to put it. We do, like when we get to training camp, for example, we'll be like, here's the idea of what we're trying to do. We expect this to change within 24 hours. But at the end of the day, we know what performs. Do that stuff. And if it sold, not sold, whatever, just go do it. And then see what everybody else is doing. See what's performing for us and quickly change, adapt, react, and change again. Just keep doing that. Keep coming up with new things, and we will keep firing it off. It's going to be easier for someone to try an idea on TikTok than it's going to be on YouTube that takes, well, not YouTube Shorts. YouTube Shorts, we're doing 4 YouTube Shorts a day. So those are just fire them off, do whatever you think is best. We trust you. Versus YouTube features where it's going to take a little more time to make the piece. So there needs to be a little bit more of like a decision-making process, because that's resources, time spent that we have to account for.
Let's talk a little bit about the schedule release anime. I don't think I'm ruffling any other team's feathers when I say that you guys kind of won that battle the past 2 years with that video. Kind of talk about where that came from inception wise in the first year, and from inception to execution and what that timeline was like and what that whole process was like.
For sure. First thing I'd say, that the Titans video this year was just incredible.
It was incredible. That was a close number two as well.
To me, it was number one. I told everyone here I liked that video. That was number one to me. But for a different reason, like kind of in a different boat, like a different path. But
right,
gosh,
well,
that
it
was
plays
funny.
Into their city extremely well. It's
so
was a,
perfect.
I don't know who came up with that concept, but it was such a home run concept idea. It's one of those things that just, I don't know what that meeting was like, but I'm sure the moment that idea was presented, that meeting was over and it was just, oh, well, yeah, obviously.
We discussed the same type of idea and we were like, nah, that won't work. We were so wrong. I mean, gosh, what an incredible job by them. So our process, first, thank you for saying that. I mean, people have been very kind, and the reaction, most importantly, for the people who work on that day to day, that video, to see that reaction, you know what that's like, guys, when like you're able to see something like your work that you care so much about be viewed like that, there's nothing better. So in year one, it was obviously a different process than year two. In year one, the team, like they have like this creative meeting and they're just like pitching ideas. I am not in those. And they're just kind of spinning the wheels. They don't have anything they like. And we have a guy here named it's David Bretto. He's now our director of creative video. We have Tyler Pino. He's our senior director of production. Megan Julian, director of social. And three of them kind of leading this charge, right? Getting the creative going. And they're sitting in a room last year and they weren't getting it. And then Andrew Cordova, who is on our storytelling team, who makes All In. If you haven't seen our documentary show All In, I freaking love that thing. Please watch it on YouTube. Shout out YouTube. But the thing is like Cordova pitch is like, hey, just goes up to David's like, we could do anime. And David's like, sure. How are we going to do it? He's like, oh, I make anime. It's like, what? We didn't even know that. You're our documentary guy. And he's like, yeah, I do it on my own time. So they brought it to me and I was like, oh, I mean, sure. I mean, I had some questions, but it was like, I mean, my question was more like, when have you been making, where are these drawings that you've been doing? Like, where does this even happen? Like, you get kind of lucky, guys. Like, you want to be successful, you got to be lucky. We were lucky. Andrew just has this incredible talent and just an incredible brain. And he pitched the idea and David believed in him. And credit to the both of them. And then they just started the process. In year one, it was like, okay, we know what needs to be done. Like, why could anime work? Well, it can work because it has it's a subculture that is massive. Okay, that's important. So you're going to bring in an audience that doesn't know who we are. Then what are you going to do for the NFL fan? Well, we're going to make fun of them. We know that that's our thing. How are you going to do that enough in so many ways that you're going to make people rewatch the video? That's the next step. So it needs to be short enough that people want to rewatch it, but not long enough. But also you don't want to make it long enough that people don't have an interest in seeing it again. You want people to stop and start. So they started coming up with these little Easter eggs to start placing in there. And one thing leads to another. They were wildly nervous on the launch. And then I've never seen just like, so like within 3 minutes, I could hear David Bretto in his office just yelling. He was so happy. He knew it was viral, just yelling viral. And then we knew we had a hit. And that was really cool for them. And I say them because it is them. Incredible job. And then year two was easy. I mean, I think we messed around and probably made people believe we might not, but at least in my mind, it was settled from the moment the first video came out. We were doing that again.
I want to talk. You said a key word in there and you said, well, we're going to make fun of other teams. That's what we do. I think you guys have an extremely distinctive voice in your content and on your socials. And it's distinctively different from, and every team's voice, in my opinion, is different and distinct, right? But finding that voice can be a process. What was it like finding that voice for your team, for your department, right? That then represents the overall team, and how did you land to where you are now? Because I always think that process is different and unique for each group.
It's been a process, man. In 2019, you know, I was just on the video side and Megan Julian was brought in to do our social media. We had a kid here named Colton Gordon working for her. And we were coming in to play the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was, I think, 2019. Aylin was our coach. We were having a hell of a year. I think we went 12-4 that year. We're going to play the Pittsburgh Steelers, Sunday Night Football, big game. Colton and Megan came up with this idea. Let's take this guy from the office, Kevin. Let's put him in Steelers gear because he says, I hate Philip, because it's what's her name's kid in the show. I can't remember, in the office. It's like our favorite show. And he pitched it. It looked good. We went with it and it went super viral. And that was like, oh, Megan's like, oh, we're kind of on to something here. That's all them. And Megan would tell you our voice is like, we want to connect with the younger audience. We need to make people not just believe, but know that we are accessible. We like attainable as a voice. You could feel like we could be one of you. That's how we want to feel, not corporate. And so over time it developed, and certainly as the maybe structure has changed, nothing's changed. It's monetized the voice, build it bigger, take that voice and apply it to every part of our content. And we've then gone and hired people. We like to say like weird brains. We like to find some weird brains and then have a bunch of them and then come up with some weird ideas. And that evolution over the last 5 years has been really fun. It has certainly led to something distinct that has certainly helped us. I mean, what Megan Julian has done, and now Allie Raymond, Lauren Walker, our entire social team, it's really incredible. Their ability to, like, if you go on our Instagram page, there's almost a meme associated with every post. The amount of creative time that takes to be that creative, it's really incredible. So I always like to say that, like, we're irreverent. That's my word for our voice. And the only thing we've tried to do from there is make sure it's built up across every facet of content.
So you all have kind of set the stage on the meme train. How, kind of a two-part question. How do you continue to run away from the crowd, and how do you determine, I mean, in your mind, other people will try, but how many people actually succeed the way that you do?
Well, I could say for certain that the Jacksonville Jaguars social team absolutely smoked us.
With the broken charger. Yeah, torn charger.
Yeah. But no, it was the after receipts video. So they did a couple different things. I think they did something about our PF Chang's tweet, you know, I need to find my wife and go to PF Chang's. They did something like that. They did something with the receipts video. They buried us, man. Like, they eviscerated us, and we deserved it. And it was cool to see. So the first thing I'd say is, like, I think because of how many shots we take, we are setting ourselves up to be buried on the other side. And we understand that. And everyone here kind of gets that could happen. In terms of everybody else, you know, nobody has to take as many chances as we do. Like, we are building an audience. This is a revolution. You come work here every day. We are trying to build the next generation of fan, and we want them to be a Charger fan, specifically in LA. We believe that this is not a fight for year one, year two, year three, but a 20-year fight and a 30-year fight. And to do that, we need to make sure that the next generation is a Charger fan. And how do you do that? You get to the young people, you get them through their phones. So you got to have fun. You got to troll people. You got to make people, anybody, see your content. How are you going to break through the noise? So we have prioritized it because it helps us grow our fan base. If that wasn't the case, we wouldn't do it. People think, I think, we just do it because we want to do it. We do it because we want new fans, and we want to build this organization as best we can and support them for the help and support they've given us. So I think the best way I put it is, you know, I don't have kids, but I was a kid at one time. And I know that if my dad was a Yankee fan and I was a Mets fan and I wanted to go to a Mets game, what's the parent doing? They're going to the Mets game. So we are going to attack this every day at every child. And I mean that in not an attacking way towards children, obviously, just more of, we are trying to make sure.
Yeah, disclaimer, that they not see, attacking children. No, yeah, no attacking children.
I have to figure out a better way to say that.
you gotta get the kids in the funnel, because they're the top of the audience.
They're everything.
You can get the kid, you can get the parents.
Correct. And then they will become the top of the funnel. That's how you build generation fandom. You can't do it in 2 weeks, you know? And I think everyone's always looking for that short-term answer. We didn't. We are focused on that audience. And I think it would be really tough for anybody else in this market to try to do that after we've been doing it for 6 years. Thankfully, there's room in this market for both teams. The Rams, I have so much respect for what they do. I think we always like to say that their success is our success and our success is their success. The building football in Los Angeles. I think what's been really cool is seeing two teams take two different approaches to doing it and both being successful.
Yeah. And it's great that you say, that you talk about, you know, the other team and not taking it personal. How important, I mean, I worked in college for, you know, 12 or 13 years. You couldn't pull that off without fan bases going off the rails. But in the NFL, and more specifically with, you know, the Chargers and how the Titans did their video. I mean, I like how Atlanta responded to the Titans video.
Yeah.
But are you all like, is there like this big meeting like, hey, we don't take anything personal, but we're going to respond when the time comes? Or like, how does that whole thing go? And how are people kind of like taking themselves out of it and just making it all fun.
For sure. I mean, first off, it's all fun. I mean, right. Sports is fun. Sports should be fun. And especially on social. So there's enough serious things going on in this world. We don't need to join in on that. And we know that if we lose, we might be getting a little more sharpnel than some other teams might. And we also know that some teams can't take shots. But, you know, like we took a good amount of shots at the New York Jets in our schedule release video, right? The Jets do memes for sure. I would be shocked that when we play them on Monday Night Football in week 9, and that's going to be a huge game, if they win, they're not coming straight for our throats. We know that. That's kind of the risk you take, but it's fun. You can't take offense to this. Like, who are we to have a problem with someone making fun of us when we do it almost every day? I mean, that's kind of, what was the first scene in our schedule release video? It was a receipt and it said 27-0 and the recipient was us. And the vendor was the Jacksonville Jaguars. The first thing in that video acknowledged that we were up 27-0. So if you're going to make fun of yourself, which you have to do in our situation, if you want to have our voice, then you have to be okay too with someone coming after you.
Yeah, I like how you put that. Do you think that the Chargers have more room in that? And no offense to the Chargers organization, but when you're not a brand like the 49ers or the Steelers or mm-hmm. the Cowboys or like the Packers, when you're a brand that has more flexibility, does that make it easier to say, hey, we're going to create something new and we go after fans, because your name isn't going to be the only one that draws new fans to you. You have to do something to pull that in.
Yeah. I mean, we're all under the understanding that we're in a unique situation that affords us an opportunity to take more chances than other teams. Green Bay Packers are not going to do that. They don't need to. The Pittsburgh Steelers do memes, but they're not going after other teams. I think we go after other teams because I don't want to speak for Megan. I mean, from my standpoint, because it's fun and you know you're going to get high engagement because people then are going to want to engage with that tweet. So that's a big part of it. So we're not risk averse, which we then know means inherently there's risk involved. And we just kind of accept that. No. To be fair, we've probably taken it to another level in some respects than even some might think is fair. We've done some pretty hard shots at people. Some could call maybe a little below the belt in some respects. You try to set a line and like understand what that line is. And then sometimes you might cross it a bit, but that's okay because you've earned that trust, right? People will call and be like, how do you do a voice like this? It's like, or call Megan all the time, not me, but Megan will be like, well, we're doing this 6 years and we've had the same group. We got the same PR team here for all 6 years, had the same boss for the last four. Ownership has trusted us. Like, this is years in the making to get us to this point, be all under the understanding that it worked. So that's why we do it more. Like, if it didn't work and people weren't engaging with it, we wouldn't do it. And I do think because of how popularized this approach has become, it means that we have to look at how we do it now. Again, because if everyone's doing it in the NFL, which it feels like most teams are now doing it when they win, well, then what are we doing to try to do it a little differently and stand out? That's the next question and something that we are in the process of trying to figure out.
It's interesting to hear you talk about the content. You've talked a lot about the audience that you're trying to create content for. And when you were talking about the schedule release video, and one of the parameters that in the first year was that you were going to bring in a new audience. So I'm curious, as you're evaluating content and looking at the numbers and the data and all of that, how much of a role does bringing in a new audience play versus the engagement of the current audience?
It's everything. Bringing in new audiences, whether they're going to become fans or not, we want them to know who we are. I mean, our goal is to get on, if you were to like, what is our goal? Our goal is to get on the Reddit NFL page with everything we do, because that's reaching 4 million different people that all like the NFL. Then you start getting on the Reddit anime page. Now we're cooking. I mean, Reddit's a big part of it. This is like millions of people here that we're trying to reach who could engage in what you're doing. Every day we just want, you're looking for different types of fans. You're looking for people who are just going to engage in your content, because at the end of the day, that's going to help us build a bigger audience on social, which is going to help us build a bigger audience and have more reach. But at the same time, we also want to just cultivate fandom, and that's done totally differently. We're not all fun and games around here. Like, we do a lot of different content. It obviously gets a lot of focus, but we are storytellers. We are trying to give someone a 360 degree, like, kind of approach to our team. So access, lifestyle, fun, memes, wherever you go, we believe we can do it really well. And so by doing that, we think people will be like, I want to engage with that. I like this. And at the end of the day, that's not to like us social. It's to like Justin Herbert. That's to like Austin Eckler and Keenan Allen, and how we're able to take their personalities and showcase them on our channels, not just for the talents they are on the field, but the people they are off of it. And if we can do that well enough, we hope that that's going to create a legitimate audience that wants to become a Charger fan. And you try to understand how much of your audience is engaged from Los Angeles and understanding those different demographics. And we dive into all of that constantly to understand that, so we can be better at our jobs.
What would you like to see next? What would you like to see you guys try next? Expounding on what you are already doing.
We're doing a couple things right now that I think are different, that like we're figuring out. Like, the first thing we did last year was, we acquired Truth or Dab, the Complex series from Hot Ones, obviously known as the number one show on the internet. We were the first group to ever partner with them to do that series. And by the way, that's not just like first group in the NFL, that's just first group ever to license out their product, get Sean Evans to be in it and create a series. What we're doing there is we're spending money to acquire something, right? But we're putting the image of who we are to the test by putting it and seeing if we can get people to believe in who we are based upon the product we have. So that was a test for us last year, and it was widely successful. That was super important to us. The other thing I guess I would say is, like, this year is, here's a huge shift for us. We are doing more football content. I'd say last year and years past, we're probably 95% non-football. And what I mean by non-football is X's and O's analysis. We don't do it. This year, we have more of it. And so we did discuss this offseason. Okay, we're coming off this game against Jacksonville. I think we need to work on, we can't expect our old efforts to get us to where we were in terms of excitement for the season. We need to make sure people understand the work that is going into making sure this can work, that this is the right team, that you can believe in this team. So we looked at, and we did acquire, a fan podcast. And they discuss football, and we put it on our feeds, and that's them discussing whatever it is related to the team. But that is how we discuss football. Or so doing more podcast content, but not only doing it, but bringing it to our feeds. And then when we're creating it, it needs to be created in a way that fits us, which means it needs to have the right look, tone, feel, which means you need the right editors to do it at a young age. And fortunately enough, we've been able to do that. That's a big step forward for us in where we want to go. We're moving in next year to a new facility. In that facility will be the first time we have a new studio, our first studio. We've never had one, really. So we're going to have a 700 square foot gaming studio on the first floor next to where the players are. That's going to be like more video games and gaming, just like board games. And then upstairs on the third floor, we'll have a rather large content studio where we will have a desk for podcasts and more football content, which is not something we've done before. So we're going to continue to evolve with the times and try to explore different areas, all within the goal of, we want, by the time the season comes, people to be rabid fans and believe in this team, no doubt, 100% ready to go. Let's rock. Let's go win a Super Bowl.
Okay. So, going to take a slight shift. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And yes, we're talking to creatives, all things mental health. How are you approaching mental health, and not just you yourself, but as a supervisor? How are you addressing that with your team?
It's a great question, and it is so important. I mean, you can't expect to get a lot out of creatives if their mind isn't right. you know, you can't work them to death and then expect them to deliver a good product. Mental health too has a lot to do with time management, learning how to manage your time and understand how to put it away. That's really tough to do when you work in this job, right? Because your job is on your phone. I think for me personally, I have not cracked the code on this. I still struggle. But some things I do is I'm a diehard Mets fan. Every day, everyone on the staff knows that TV right over there on my left is going on and the Mets game is on and I am working, but I am also watching the Mets, and I typically try not to set meetings during that time. It makes me feel like I'm back home. I'm connected a bit. That helps me a lot. Now, I'll text my buddies about the game. I'm still working, obviously, but like it just helps me disconnect from what feels like when you're in the moment, you're doing the most important thing in the world, but you're not. This is just fun and it reminds you of that. I've gotten better at leaving work behind when you go home and trying to set like a distinct line, which doesn't exist a lot now with people working from home. But I really try to set some boundaries on what I'm going to do and what I'm not going to do over the weekend if I do anything at all. For young kids, the biggest thing is you have to learn what works for you, and we want you to learn that. It can be really tough for kids, like we talked about in the beginning, right? You're doing all this work. You're leaving college. You're trying to get adjusted. You're not making a lot of money. You don't know what you're going to do in 5 years. And I think what we always try to tell people is just take a breath, calm down, take it day by day, put your hand up, acknowledge you're tired, acknowledge your mind isn't right, and you need a break, and we will give you the break. Accountability for yourself is super important. And so trying to teach people how to be accountable and acknowledge when it's time for a break. And then I think just like today's a good example. We got everyone out today for a little 4-day weekend with Memorial Day. So like we try our best to do that. And we're also I'm not a be here at 8 or 9 a.m. type guy. I mean, there's days I walk in here at 10 a.m. I mean, that's okay. Just do your job, do it the best of your abilities, and don't feel like you owe us anything other than when you're in the building, do your best. I guess the last thing I'd say is as I like to put it, like we completely understand that not every day you can give 100% of 100% of yourself because it's not available. You could be having a really rough day. You could be dealing with something personally. If you only have 40% of yourself to give in that day, just give us 40% when you're in the building. That's it. Do the best you can on that day to be the best version of yourself and just keep the train moving.
And how are you, I mean, as an organization, how are you having these conversations? Do you kind of set that tone when they walk in the door the first time, you know, after signing the paper? I mean, it's at the forefront of a lot of, you know, it's probably causing a lot of the movement in the job force. But how mm-hmm. are you as an organization approaching it? Are you constantly having conversations about, hey, make sure that you're good, make sure that you give us what you have when you're in the building, and communicating that?
Yeah, this whole I mean, I can't say those things to the team unless the organization believes that, you know, like we got like a laid back atmosphere. It's California. So I think someone was asking me the other day, do people wear like suits and tucked in shirts? No, people wear a lot of t-shirts and jeans around here. Like we got a laid back atmosphere vibe. We want to work outside. Like it's different in creatives than it is for like our partnership team, obviously. Like it's a very different thing. You got to go out and sell something. You got to look presentable. I think it's a little different on the creative side. I think what we're trying to do as best we can is align with the times, and at the same time, try to teach people the certain values that I believe and that others in this department believe who have experience, and teach that to young ones so we can help develop how they think of things. We are not trying to like tell people just work hard to work hard. No way. We want you to get all the credit in the world for what you do. We want you to work hard, but we want you to be able to take breaks, and we want you to learn how to understand in yourself, in your body, in your mind when you're not ready to do the job and be able to put your hand up and say it. And then sometimes, and this is really important, sometimes you got to learn how to fight through some adversity. A lot of times nowadays, it's like, well, there's a little adversity, let's pack it in. And that's not life. That's not how this goes. So sometimes you got to deal with some shit. Sorry, if I shouldn't have. All right. You got to deal with some shit, right? Like, we all got stuff going on in our personal lives. We understand that. Do the best to make it through a day. If you can't come in, you can't come in. We get you. Like, we've had some people go through some really, really, really rough stuff over the years here in their personal lives. Dude, the job is just the job. Your family is what matters. Your personal life and who you are is what matters. We are here to support that and to encourage you to develop. Like, I guess what I want at the end of the day is I want people to become better people from working here. That's really important to me. But that's not always going to align with everyone. I know that. Like, we're not going to be everyone's cup of tea. And that's okay too. We go through a pretty thorough hiring process. Like, we really make sure that we have an understanding of who these people are as collaborators, as workers. And then by the time they get in the building, we hope we understand what we're getting and they understand us, right? Like, and then if we do that, then hopefully everyone understands what we're trying to do here and what we expect of them, like we talked about at the beginning, and what they expect of us, because it goes both ways. Accountability, trust, all of that goes both ways. It's not like they just have to be accountable to me. I'm accountable to them just as much. That was good?
That was awesome.
All right, good. Well, hopefully, all right, you never know. You never know. We are just trying to stay with the times, you know? Like, 10 years ago, if we talked about mental health, it just wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Like, no one was talking about my mental health when I was sitting in a basement logging videos for 12 hours a day, getting home at 11 p.m. No one cared, and I didn't expect them to care. But people are different, times are different, and we want to care about people. It's always like the whole thing. It's just like, if you can give us your best when you're here and you understand that, you understand that we understand that you're a good person and you're a good teammate, because like that's a big part of this too, is like, I think earlier you were asking me about like how we trust or greenlight things. People get greenlit projects because we believe they're good people who look out for their teammates. That's how you get better projects. You could be the most talented person in the world. If you're not a good person, you can go ahead and find someplace else to work. That's it. So you're a good person, then you're going to be surrounded by other good people. You come work here, you're going to know you're surrounded by good people, because I'm telling you, we're going to be surrounded by good people. Doesn't mean you're going to get along with them every day, because you better disagree with people. This is content. We all got different ideas, and some people don't take well to when their ideas get trashed a bit. But it's important that you understand that with transparency and accountability comes responsibility. And we just try to teach that along the way.
I like how you used a good teammate and say, and you said, look out for your teammates. Because some people think that being a good teammate is just, oh, be kind to one another and I'll just do whenever somebody needs something. And some people will take advantage of that. But it's actually making sure that everyone's holding each other up and it's not just a one side transaction.
Got to lift each other up, man. Like, you know, the conversation that exists now on social about like credit for things. That's a big thing nowadays with creatives, right?
That conversation.
Yeah. Well, I'll touch it for a second because I think it plays into this. There's no doubt, I have this conversation with people all the time. I get attention on social media for the work other people do. There's no doubt. But what I try to do is make sure that the first person who's getting credit, no matter, I'm going to get credit because I'm the boss. That's how this works. I get credit for everything. No matter if I did it or not, I'm letting you know that. I let everybody here know that. But I will do my best to build as big of a profile we can build for each individual person in this department, because that only helps us grow who we are and only helps your career. So we are trying to give that credit. I'll be the first. I'll shout out the editor, and you'll shout out the editor. But then there might be a producer on the project who's like, dude, like, I had something to do with it too. And like, you take something like schedule lease, it's like, how am I going to tweet 27 people to thank them? There's not enough characters, right? I think we've done a really good job here just being like, hey, over time, you're going to see everyone's getting their credit. Everyone's getting their flowers. If people in your department have different expectations, you got to look yourself in the mirror, because that's on you, not on anyone else. if people here have different expectations, then they're probably, that's on me and no one else. A lot of times, young kids, especially on social, freelancers, whoever, they're always like putting themselves on the back and the name on the back. I'm good with that. Hey, like, that's cool, man. But shout out your teammates too if you work here, because you don't do anything by yourself, right? Good example of that is like, obviously our schedule release video, right? And so, but the flowers need to go to Andrew Cordova. He's the one who dove in and took all that. You know how many people supported that? 10 people. But 10 people understand that on this project, their role is to support Andrew. That's it. And if you don't get that and you don't want that life, go find someplace else to work. It's as simple as that. We are straightforward with that approach. And I am accountable to everybody here, which means everybody's going to get good projects. Because there's a, like, it's, you know, the disease of me, the Miami Heat culture, just reading about it the other day. And I believe in this. When teams start winning championships, and I am not comparing us to a championship winning team, I'm simply saying that when you have success, people tend to believe it's about themselves. Egos start getting in the way. How do you keep egos out of it? Well, you could look at how the Miami Heat do it and the disease of me and how they work to make sure that doesn't happen. We spend a lot of time on that stuff. I spend a lot of time on that stuff to ensure that the creative leaders in this building are not trying to take credit for other people's work or continuing to build them up, and that we have the proper structures in place to ensure that that doesn't happen, right? And if you can do that, then young creatives are going to want to come in here and work because they know that their bosses are not trying to steal their flowers. And if that can happen, then we got a shot. Then we have a shot to sustain inflation, sustain the political socioeconomic world we live in that is a disaster at some points, and have a shot of, as freelance becomes bigger and young kids leave college and want jobs, we still have a shot to get people in this building and continue to build on what we have and have been doing for 6 years.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.